Well, there they are, the Tom Tom Club, and the Wordy Rapping Hood is the tune, and it does welcome in another edition of the Wordy Rapping Hood on RPPFM on this Friday. Tracy Hutchison here with you. Great to have your company. The program that has the great privilege in lots of ways to roll in members of our wonderful local community and get to know folk who are doing some pretty cool stuff here on the Mornington Peninsula that we know and love and call home. And I'm really excited to meet and welcome into RPP on this Friday Cheryl Beattie. She's a singer-songwriter, had a pretty wild international career, and but is also the founder of the Rosebud-based music school, The Music Industry, and she joined us here on RPP. Cheryl, g'day.
Hi, Tracy. How are you?
I'm pretty good, thanks. Welcome into RPP. We're going to talk a lot about your music career that took you to the UK and the US and back again and brought you right back to full circle to the peninsula and the music school that you founded all through the course of this hour. But the first question for this program is always, what brought you to the peninsula? And for you, you didn't have to go very far at all.
No, I guess I was born and raised in Frankston and always singing, so doing a lot of local gigs. So I was always in Rosebud. I was doing, you know, the Rosebud pub way back when, we're talking many years ago, and the Flinders Hotel. And so I was always on the peninsula and loved it. And then, of course, then I've done this, you know, huge circle where then I moved to Melbourne and then on to New York and then London and what have you. And then never dreamed that I'd be back down on the peninsula, but very happy that I am, and met a lovely Englishman on the way who insisted that, you know, it was paradise and the best place on the earth. So here we are 15 years later.
Back again. So I'm going to talk a little bit about those growing up years and you and that lighting of the musical flame for you. So take us to your growing up years in Frankston and, you know, the schools, and I guess that your miss or Mr. or Miss Chips, who was the person who really lit the flame for you musically.
Well, probably in the beginning it was my parents. I had I was always able to sing. My dad, being Irish, from an Irish background, and you know, were in orchestras, all of his family and what have you. So I was always able to sing. I was actually really intensely shy. So music has been a great part of my life to overcome a lot of that. So when I was younger, I was always, if ever I sang, I was sort of had people wanting me to join their band. And when I went to the local school down at Stella Maris, it was at the time. And I was in both choirs. So I was, when I was there, you know, in Form 1 back then, I was also in the senior choir because I had such a powerful voice. So I was always put into these situations where I was, you know, wanted to sing, but, you know, so, but it was really my parents who would take me to the venues when I was very young. So I joined a band at 12, and by the time I was 14, we were gigging all over the place, and obviously I couldn't get there without my parents, and they were incredible.
Wow.
So very supportive. Mum made me sing in front of the relatives every week, which killed me. That was worse than on the stage, because it's nothing worse than, all the singers out there will understand this, singing in the lounge room to, you know, the aunties and uncles. So that was the beginning. So it was always, singing was always a part of my life. I was in a band. I was in the choirs. I was, you know, singing whenever I could. I was actually teaching when I was 12 the neighbourhood, you know, the little kids, you know, how to sing. And
wow.
So, yes, it was just second nature to me, music. And then I went on from there and joined bands and went on to work with fantastic bands in Melbourne at a very young age. And
what sort of venues were you playing in, and what era, without sort of wanting to give era are we talking about?
We're talking the 80s, and I was in a band back then. By the time, I'd done a lot of music by then, and I was in a band, fantastic band, probably the best musicians, in one of the top musicians in Australia. But and we were playing in at the Underground, which was fantastic, and of course the Grain Store.
So they were in the 80s. Oh. The Underground and the Grain Store were two of the big venues in Melbourne.
Yes.
They're probably on that King Street strip, I imagine.
That's it.
And which was the sort of centre of the universe in terms of nightclubbing and that kind of particular type of live music. They were sort of having bands, and it was the beginning of the sort of idea of a disco, a discotheque.
That's
in that period. So what sort of stuff were you singing? You were also writing and doing your own thing, but are you coming out of that Irish background? I've got sort of a sort of a folky Celtic kind of thing going.
Well, no, but, yeah. it was more sort of this the musicians I was playing with specifically at the Grain Store were a different band to the ones that I was playing with at the Underground. But they were very session. So we did a lot of Paddy Austin and great singers, great music. It wasn't the sort of top 40. They selected great music that they enjoyed playing as well. So, and then I put together Get Off the Cat, which was a funk band. And so we did a lot of great, you know, it wasn't
the
top 40
for it
again,
too,
really.
Wasn't it?
It was great, amazing. And so that was, but I realized back in the 80s, you know, you made a lot of money playing covers. And I knew that it was a bit of a trap. So I hadn't started writing songs at that point, but I wanted to. And I thought, right, that's when I thought I need to go around the world. I need to live a bit and see the world, and I want to start writing music. And that's why I left Melbourne at that point. A lot of people said, why would you leave Melbourne? You're in the top bands, you're playing the best venues. But I knew that I would miss out on that period.
Yeah, there was something else. Cheryl Beattie is with us. She's our guest on this Friday on The Wordy Rapping Hood, singer-songwriter and founder of the Rosebud-based music school, The Music Industry, which we'll talk a little more about throughout the course of this hour. Cheryl, coming from that Irish background, and you cited your parents as being a really big influence, does that the growing up influences then would have been very much that balladeering, that sort of folky kind of storytelling through music, I'm imagining, and that influenced perhaps some of those early songs that you would have written?
Well, interesting that, well, my mum and dad were crazy about Shirley Bassey and Barbara Streisand. So,
not to be crazy about.
My father being a passionate lover of big vocals and great vocals, he's so, he was pitch perfect, he was so funny. That's all we heard. But then I had my brother who was 10 years older, so I had Creedence and Pink Floyd and so a real mixture of, genres and music. To this day, I still, love Creedence and Pink Floyd and Shirley Bassey and Barbara Streisand. So it was interesting for me, the singer-songwriter didn't come until really I moved overseas and I started to hear more singer-songwriters like your Sean Colvins and your Sarah McLachlans and all that. Then that's when I really thought, wow, there's a whole other world of music that I'm not, and a lot of it we didn't hear here.
No, it was still filtering through, and I guess the transferability of music that we know now and take for granted now was certainly not something that that was overly present then. It was sort of, this was still kind of alternate radio. There was the Jays in Sydney and community radio in Melbourne, but you still had to work pretty hard to find it. We're going to have a listen to one of your very first forays as a songwriter, and a song that ended up being a real launching pad for you. In another guise, but talk us through this song called Fly and the inspiration and the first writing of it.
So this was the second song I ever wrote, and it was a song. So it was so interesting. It was a bit of a journey with this. I was sitting on the train. I was going to my co-writer, my then co-writer Kit,
in London.
No, this was in New York.
Still in New York.
So sitting on the train, and this melody was going round in my head, and I could hardly sing it. It was so high. It was very, very high. It was beautiful, but I was floating around. So when I got to her, I finally sort of said, "I've got this melody. Quick, get the piano out. I've got this crazy melody," and it was Fly. So it was, and the words came out with the melody, and it was, but it was really true. It was like, fly like a bird in the wind, so high, to reach your dreams, fly. So I'm like, it was just appeared, in my head. So that's how that started.
Let's listen to it and talk more about the story behind it and the life and times that it was part of for Cheryl Beattie in her time in New York and London. Was the year of the big power ballad, and that tune Fly from Cheryl Beattie was certainly absolutely ticking that genre box. So we're talking about, so that eventually came out about 1990, but you'd sort of written it, well, you'd written it around about then. So let's do that leap from being in Melbourne, gigging around the Grain Store and the other kind of clubs around Melbourne at the time. And you take yourself off to London initially. So just take us through that little journey for Cheryl Beattie at that time.
So at the time, my then partner was also a singer-songwriter. And he, the two of us just decided to go on this journey together. We actually went all through America and then got to London and decided to stay put and, you know, we'd done a lot of travelling. So it was time. It was a really good industry as well back then. And it was interesting because we took a different approach to looking for fans and he'd been writing songs along the way at that time. And he decided to go, at the time it was PRS, which is Performing Rights Society, as the same as what we have out here.
APRA.
So he went and approached them as opposed to going to the record companies because he felt that we need to get some fans on board. So I was actually just singing the songs he was writing, and that was sort of the role he wanted me to play. And I was young and I was like, that's fine, you're the songwriter. Luckily that the chap who heard it really enjoyed my singing voice, and quite quickly we were doing the gigs, we got the bands together, so we're playing some great venues, and all of a sudden the head of it was called Imago Records, which was BMG, Terry Ellis, who owned Chrysalis, came along and really liked my singing, loved my singing, and so he signed us quite quickly and moved us on to New York once we'd negotiated the deal and everything. So for me it was like, wow, this whirlwind, it happened so quickly. And I must say Andrew was very much instrumental in getting it out there and putting it all together. So then we were then moved over to New York, and those were the days of the big record deal. So, you know, you got the nice big advance and they put us up and, you know, they, it was crazy, you know, restaurants every night. And oh my gosh, in the end I felt guilty and I'd have them for dinner, you know. Yeah.
And this was a time too, Cheryl Beatty, where you were signed by, so whereabouts in the story does being signed by Whitney Houston's management come into it?
Okay, so at that point I was already signed to BMG and I was, Andrew's developing as a writer. So once you have a record deal, you do have the doors open to all the sort of managers out there and all that sort of thing. So I met with quite a few managers, and Gene was the one who, you know, I felt, because he'd managed, obviously still managing at the tail end of her career, Whitney Houston, I felt because he'd worked with big ballad singers would be fantastic. So so I worked with Jean for quite a few years.
Cheryl Beatty is our guest, singer-songwriter, founder of the Rosebud-based music school, The Music Industry, and we're rolling through her life and times, which took her from a growing up years in Frankston to New York City, recording that song, or writing initially that song and recording that song, Fly. That version, the ballad version, as you said, was one of the first songs that you wrote. Yep. It went on to have quite a life of its own, that song. Tell us about the trajectory of that song, and we might hear a little bit of the dance version as well.
So after I wrote that particular song, I was still working with lots of different songwriters, and so I was also, you know, sort of trying different styles and things like that. So I became more of the lyricist, and I wrote the lyrics to Fly, co-wrote the lyrics to Fly. But so I sort of went around and wanted to get a collection of songs. Obviously, you can't get a record deal off one song. So I then went off to write an album and wrote a whole bunch of material and was doing a lot of gigs, touring and flying back and forward from LA to New York. It was incredible. Probably every 3 weeks I was flying to either London or... And it was nothing back then, you know. It was just like, oh, I've got a songwriting trip, I've got to go, you know, off you go. And it was amazing. I wrote with incredible people.
Would you want to name some?
Oh, my gosh. Well, of course, Steinberg and Kelly were amazing. So I wrote quite a few songs with them.
They wrote Like a Virgin for Madonna.
Yep. Eternal Flame, Saving Up My Love. What was the one? There's a Whitney Houston song.
A Whitney Houston
song. Another Whitney Houston. Okay. Yeah. I've got to think. So many songs. I mean, yeah, so Like a Virgin.
You also crossed paths with Martha Davis from the Motels and remain a collaborator. Tell us about that story.
So Martha is a wonderful woman, incredibly creative. So her and I, she took me more on the artist. She was saying, you need to be more of the artist, Cheryl, as opposed to just writing songs with everybody. So I spent a lot of time with Martha in LA, and that was fantastic. So we wrote some beautiful, beautiful songs. So, and then she'll send me a track now and I'll write, you know, I do that with Kit as well, you know, the melody and lyrics and things like that. So, yeah, so I keep in touch with my co-writers just to, you know.
Fabulous.
Yes.
And this song, Fly, which we I want to have a little bit of a listen to the dance version of it, because somehow it sort of ended up, and it was the era of the producer. You know, it was very much that era of the producers having their own sound and their own studios. So we had the sort of Stock Aitken and Waterman working with Kylie a little bit, perhaps a little bit later than this, but certainly around that time, it was absolutely the time of the producer. And so this song ended up in the hands of some folk who'd worked with Cher.
Yeah, so this was when I then signed a record deal with Warners, and they took Fly and said, oh, by the way, we've put it in the hands of these particular gentlemen that are going to do a mix for you. And they've just done, you know, Do You Believe in Love? And I said, oh, okay, oh, that'll be interesting. Not ever in a million years thinking that could work, my ballad being turned into a dance song. But they did it, and so that became a part of the tour as well. And then all of a sudden it took off in all the dance clubs and
in the UK.
In the UK. So there I was in my, you know, in my glitter dresses singing the dance song. So
this is about, where are we, about 1990?
No, this was 1999.
1999.
Yes. So.
And we're heading into the dance floors in London, all around the UK, and this song for a while was sitting at the top of the charts. It's called Fly on RPPFM, this version. Cheryl Beattie. The dance version of Fly, Cheryl Beattie, has transformed into a gold glittering dress on RPPFM on this Friday, taking us back to 1999 when her song, originally penned as a ballad, ended up at the top of the UK dance charts in the hands of a couple of big-time producers. Cheryl Beattie is our guest on RPPFM, the singer-songwriter, also founder of the Rosebud-based music school, The Music Industry. Cheryl, we will talk about the music industry, your music school, shortly, but I have to get you to take us back to that time. A pretty heady time, I would imagine, by any description. What do you think when you hear that song again?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, it brings back a lot of such great memories. And my partner, my now partner, actually came on that tour with me, and we would go all around England, and it was so much fun. It was so awesome just to, you know, talk on radio. I did a lot of radio shows and everyone was playing it and then dancing, and it was great, you know. It was such a fantastic time. And I guess you don't realise until even later on you look back and go, wow, you know, it was such a whirlwind, you know. It really was. But great, such an amazing experience. I'm so blessed to have had that experience, because you know, you don't realise.
And you don't actually. It is one of those things too, when you're in an experience like that, you have no capacity to even measure the significance of it or how enormous it is. And it's only really with the benefit of hindsight where you sort of actually think, oh, is that actually me doing that?
It's so true. It's like people often say to me, oh, and you worked with that person. I'm like, yes, I did. Yep. It's like, yes, I remember that now. So.
Yes.
Very lucky.
And it all sounds terribly glamorous and fabulous and flying around the world, you know, to-ing and fro-ing across the States and perhaps back to London for a bit of songwriting here and there. There was a lot of money around in the music industry then.
Yes.
But there were also a lot of people that were, you know, kind of struggling and getting by on their wits to a certain extent. Was it all kind of champagne and chocolates for you during that time?
Oh, no, definitely not. Well, you know, obviously there was a lot of that, meeting, you know, amazing people. But then there was a period where actually I was waiting on my visa. So I was actually there, which, you know, I couldn't work or anything like that. So I ended up getting a job as a dog walker in New York.
Good job. Good choice.
So, you know, obviously all the dogs need walking. And so I ended up having 6 dogs that I would walk morning, noon and night time.
And what was your preferred location?
Well, we go into Central Park, of course. It was so great. And I lived right near Central Park. And I lived around the corner from the 2 enormous, beautiful apartment buildings. And one of the dogs that I was walking belonged to Dustin Hoffman. So that I've got the funniest story. So I basically had been walking Maggie for a few weeks.
But Dustin's dog?
Dustin's dog.
What was Maggie?
Maggie was her name. She was a Belgian shepherd. And she was very distressed. And she was new to New York. She'd come over from LA. So Dustin had brought her over to New York. And she was very distressed. And it was awful. I hope I can say this on radio. And so she had diarrhea.
Oh.
It was awful. So anyway, and I was so upset and I was thinking, how can I cure Maggie? You know, because I love my dogs that I was walking. You get attached. And I'd never met Dustin at this point. It was always the, lady come to the helping hand at the door. And so I realised, this is so funny, and I thought, oh, my gosh, well, you know, sometimes when I go home to Australia, you know, change of water, you know, isn't so pleasant. And so I'd realised, I've done it, I've pegged it. I know why Maggie's having these problems.
Got an upset tummy. Yes. And so did you diagnose that?
So I diagnosed that. And anyway, so this particular day, I walk up to the door and, of course, who opens the door but Dustin, with, you know, he's got no shirt on, a little pair of shorts and a glass of red wine at lunchtime. Hello. Anyway, I didn't know my name, of course. And I'm like, oh, hi. So I thought, great, I'll tell him.
How did that go?
Oh, gosh. So he just stood there and he looked at me after I'd said to him about the water and what I think was wrong with Maggie. And he said, so, Cheryl, where are you from?
Mm.
And I said, from Melbourne. And he looked at Maggie and he looked at me and he said, Maggie, you've got Melbourne diarrhea. And then every time I would see him, he would come out and put his hand on my shoulder and saying, how are you feeling today, Cheryl?
Fabulous.
No.
Fabulous.
So silly. Anyway.
All the things that you do to survive as a singer and a songwriter in an industry that has certainly its shares of highs and lows for those of us who have a little bit of a close look at it. Cheryl Beatty is our guest. She is a singer-songwriter, born and raised on the peninsula and come full circle with her music school, The Music Industry, which we'll talk about in a sec. Cheryl, 1999, the dance version of that comes out, and then... Yes. And then you're deciding at that point you might come back to Australia kind of around about the same time. So perhaps those sort of old pangs to come back do get us all in the end, I think. So just talk us through that period coming back to Australia and I guess sort of the people you were working with and some of the other collaborations around that time, because we've got another one lined up to play.
So it was really, it was kind of a decision due to my family. My brother became quite unwell, and I'm from a very close family, and I'd always missed home. And I thought, well, once the dance version came out, and I thought, well, you know what, I'm going to, if anything happens, I can go back to England at another stage or what have you. But I really also wanted to start a family. So I just, I made that decision and came back, and loved being back here, and now have two children and love being on the peninsula and doing what have you. And then I was flying back because I then signed another contract with another dance producer called Jason Nevins. So I went back to New York.
Oh, so he'd been working with Run DMC.
Yes,
so
that's right.
At that height of that very, the beginning of I guess the stuff that was coming out of the States, the all the rap and Run DMC, Public Enemy, all those, it was kind of huge at that time.
That's right.
So that must have been an interesting pairing as well.
It was interesting. It was great because, you know, I moved back here and then I just popped over, you know, for a month, and we did a solid block of songwriting and what have you. So that was great. And Kit, my co-writer, worked with us as well. So I didn't feel like coming home. That was it. But since having children, you know, it's not so easy just to flit off to New York.
Yeah.
So, you know, but if I, you know, get the, I obviously can write. We don't need to be there in the room anymore.
It doesn't. It's an incredible capacity that we have, file sharing and the like. We're going to have a listen to another song another collaboration, and this one with the Australian tenor Peter Brocklehurst. Tell us about this collaboration and this song before we hear it.
At the time, Nick Collum was Peter's manager, and they had just done the Australia story about Peter's life, which was quite incredible, his life journey. And they were looking for people to write songs for Peter. So I'd sent in – actually, my mother sent in always there my CD, a CD of my music, and they rang Mum and said – we've got to meet your daughter, blah, blah, blah. They loved the music and what have you, all my songs. And so I went and met up with them and they asked me to write a duet.
And Peter, so join the dots a little for us on that, on this as well. Very, very established Australian classical singer,
yes.
A tenor.
Yes.
And so the collaboration with the two of you, you sang together on this?
Yes. So he wanted me to write the song. He wasn't a writer. He's not a writer, Peter. Mm. So I worked with John Grant, who I work with, and we write songs and what have you together. John Grant's from Melbourne. He's fantastic. So we came up with an idea. So the song's very it's hard to write a song in opera that's, you know, because it's not really, I'm not really that sort of songwriter, but he wanted something that would cross over. Mm. So something pop with an operatic feel. So
let's have a listen to it. This is If I Say, Cheryl Beattie and Peter Brocklehurst on Audible PFM. Well, that's the Australian opera star Peter Brocklehurst and our very own Peninsula star Cheryl Beattie singing on her song, If I Say, together. And Cheryl is our guest here on RPP, The Wordy Rapping Hood. Tracy Hutchison here with you on this Friday as we're weaving our way through the life and times of Cheryl, which has brought her back to the Peninsula. Cheryl, interesting working with someone like Peter Brocklehurst, very, very different genre of singer.
Yes.
And I guess that's the thing about and the skill and the challenge for the songwriter to sort of write with a whole range of different people. What do you think is the trick to great songwriting?
I think it's obviously getting the emotion in the melody and the lyric to work together. Mm. And trying to come up with something that's really real, you know, as opposed to something, because, you know, when you work with a lot of songwriters, there's a lot of crafting that goes on. You know, you hear a lot of songs that you think, oh, I've heard that, you know, a million times. Mm. So I think a great songwriter is someone who comes up with a fabulous lyric, with a story to tell, but also the emotional content is in the melody with the lyric that works together. And that's not easy. You know, it takes a while to, you know, to come up with that. And then once, you know, but then, you know, as I say, we talk about this all the time, you'll write a whole bunch of songs and, you know, and then all of a sudden something will come out and you just know that it's, you've captured it, you know.
Cheryl Beattie is our guest, the singer, songwriter and founder of the Rosebud-based music school, The Music Industry. Our guest on this Friday is Cheryl Beattie, singer, songwriter and the woman who has single-handedly built the music industry on the Mornington Peninsula, well, her music school called The Music Industry. Cheryl, just the vision for that, what made you think I'm gonna start a music school in Rosebud, I'm gonna plonk it on the corner of Jetty Road and the Nepean Highway, and if I build it, they'll come?
That's exactly what I felt. being a mother of two musicians, I was always travelling to take them to have music lessons. But there was never a concert or anything, so I was constantly putting bands together for the kids and, you know, I run the Carols by Candlelight in Rye. So I was constantly putting little acts together and doing this, and I thought, this is crazy, we don't have that down here. I know that in the schools they have, some of the kids have that opportunity, but not all of them. And not all of the kids put their hand up either, so they don't get chosen a lot to have those, to be, you know, in the plays or in the bands. So I thought, that's it, I'm building the facility. I've wanted to do it for years, and so now's the time. My boys have grown up a bit. They were a bit young back then and I would never have seen them because it's primarily at night. And I wanted to do it so that children have the opportunity to not just have lessons but to grow in confidence. It helped me so much in my life. I was so shy. Mm. And from a very poor family. And so for me, it has transformed my life. And there are key people that I'll never forget. And I would love to be able to be somebody in children's lives that one day I can have helped in some way, whether it be not just in their ability, but to grow confidence-wise. So it's a very performance-based school. So that's been my goal. So there's nothing greater for me than walking down the corridor and hearing the drums and the piano and the guitar, and I look in and, you know, there's the kiddies and they're just coming on so beautifully, and it's my dream.
So tell us about the range of creative options that you afford at the music school, your music school, the music industry in Rosebud.
So what we do, we are actually part of the plaza, the Rosebud Plaza, which is great. So we've done some busking and we'll be doing some busking in there. So that gives the kiddies a chance to sing in front of people, and it's not a lot of pressure. It's not on a stage or anything. Mm. And they love it. They make lots of money. I make nothing. So I get up and sing and they're like, well, you should be good. You're that age.
Well, you make that warm inner glow that you know from having created the situation.
That's it. I'm just, yes.
You can all get by on a warm inner glow for a while.
For a little while. And that, so we have those opportunities for the kiddies. And then we do once a month at Baja, which is a fabulous venue in Rye, which is great. So the stage is their PA. So the kids work towards that. So it's very goal orientated. And then we also record the children. So once they complete a song, we record them. So they're getting what I had when I went to when I was living in New York. I found an amazing teacher who taught me all aspects because I had a record deal. She taught me, you know, how to record, the differences between how singing when you're in a studio to singing live. Mm. So there was all of these amazing things, harmonies, and what she taught me was incredible. So that's the knowledge that I have, I want to be able to bring in with the kids. So I've got the children grouping up together. So we've got young girls and boys grouping up. I'm teaching them harmonies. You know, some of them are now, you know, being accompanied by another little student on guitar. So they're constantly, you know, have things to work towards and experiencing the different aspects of learning music with other people.
And what's the average, you're referring to them as children, so what's the average age of student that is coming to get lessons at the at your music school?
Well, our baby is 4. We have a 4-year-old who learns drums.
Wow, that's great for that family.
And Bert, who is...
They must love the fact that the 4-year-old chose the drums.
I know, we've put them straight onto the electronic drum kit, obviously, yes, steered them in that direction. And then we have Bert, who's just joined the school, who's 96, and Bert is about to start learning ukulele.
Fabulous.
And he's amazing, and he's just about to start that. And so that's all ranges. I also have a ladies group, and we range from late 30s to, you know, 60s.
And is that a primarily a choral, like a choir, a group?
It is a choir group, but we do have a lot of leads with the girls backing each other, and we do a lot of harmonies and things like that. So we don't do the typical sort of choir songs. We take songs. We've just done a great version of Purple Rain in honour of Prince, obviously, and so we've made it our own. So we take songs and, you know, songs that not necessarily you'd hear before, you know, done by choirs, and make them, turn them into sort of that type of song. So.
And the your opening was in March of this year, 2016.
Yes.
So you're about 6 months in.
Yes.
Building slowly, and you've got now around about 100 students.
Yes, we do.
So what's the vision? What's your grand plan for your music school there?
So what I want is I'd like to have about 250 students. My vision is that once all the children get to a level, that they all start to live the dream that they want to dream, that they want to have. So what I've said to all my students, end of year concert, what is it that you'd like to experience? If you want to be in a band, that's what we're going to make work for you. If you want to do an all-girl group, that's what we're going to make work for you. So I want them to have that. And then next year they might go, you know what, I just want to start playing guitar and start singing, you know, experiencing writing songs. So that's a big part of the school too. We have a fantastic studio that we've just built. So we're now recording bands and singer-songwriters, and we've got a wonderful producer who's just come on board. Fantastic.
And what does that mean for young people on the peninsula who've got something like that locally? Because I don't know that there is actually anything else locally on the peninsula.
Well, the thing is, you know, I have a young student who's tremendous, and he's so talented. He's 11 and he's writing songs. And I said, well, let's finish them, complete them, let's record it, and then you sing on it. So it's not just an idea that we go, oh, that's lovely, but how can I ever make that into an end product? Mm. So the whole thing about the school is bring in whatever idea you've got, and because obviously that's my background and my partner's background too, then we'll help you to complete your song, and then you're going to sing on it. And then, you know, so it's that whole idea of not just, oh, I've got an idea, but where do, what do I do? So now the kiddies have got that outlet, and adults. Mm. So I'm working with a chap from Mornington who's always wanted to write songs, and we wrote our first song last week. It's great, and he's thrilled, and he came up with the idea, and, you know, so I've just helped him put it together. Fabulous. So it's all about that.
Absolutely fabulous.
Yeah.
Tonight at the music school called The Music Industry in Rosebud, you've also got a forum with another local boy made good, Darren Cordeaux from Kiss Chasey.
Yes.
Local to the peninsula and really wanting to do his own giving back and being involved in fostering musical talent on the peninsula as well. And he just literally walked through your door, did he?
He did. It was amazing. And he's just wonderful, such a wonderful young man. And he wants to – we're doing a seminar tonight, so he's going to talk about the whole music industry, so from how he started writing songs. So for all those young people who've ever wanted to, you know, get into the industry, it would be a great seminar for them to come to because it's going to be very informative. So he will show how to write a song, how to go, and then he put his band together, the whole story. Mm. So
and had a terrific career, lots of airplay, amazing. Triple J, a record deal with 11 Music and still going strong, I think, aren't they?
He's now living in the States. Darren's with us, I think, till the end of August and then heading back. So he's now writing for major acts. So it's opened a huge door for him as a songwriter now and, you know, and he'll be talking about that as well. So it's I really want to bring to the peninsula for the children and adults as much of that as possible, much of that information so that they can then go on to have their careers that they desire.
And I guess also sort of realise that it is possible.
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely possible. And you know, and that's and but it's just sometimes, you know, we don't know which step to take. So that's what the school's all about, is helping people take that step, showing them.
It's possible. Cheryl Beattie has been our guest on The Wordy Rapping Hood, singer-songwriter, founder, principal vision driver of the of her music school called The Music Industry based in Rosebud. It's on the corner of Jetty Road and the Nepean Highway. You can't miss it. And tonight is that very special forum with Darren Cordeaux from the band Kiss Chasey, now based in the States, as Cheryl mentioned. Ticket cost $5.
So it's $5 a head.
Fabulous.
Or $10 for a whole family.
Fantastic. So. And you just roll up at 6 o'clock?
Come at 6 o'clock and enjoy. We're having a launch afterwards with some nibbles and things to just to launch our new studio. So you're welcome to come to that as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing the wild ride that has been your life and times. And we're very fortunate to have you back on the peninsula and really kind of showing young people and all kinds of ages of people that if you want to have a career in music, it's never too late. And
Absolutely.
Let's listen to Kiss Chasey, this fabulous tune from them called Dinosaur on Audible PFM. And Cheryl, thank you.
Thank you, Tracy.
And that's the Australian band Kiss Chasey and the song from them called Dinosaur with Darren Cordeaux out front. And he'll be doing a special songwriting forum tonight at the music school, The Music Industry, corner of Jetty Road and the Nepean Highway in Rosebud. $5 to get in or $10 as a family. Well worth it if you get a chance to catch him while he's in Australia.